Let's turn to Genesis chapter 46 now. Genesis chapter 46. Don't sit down. I usually don't recognize birthdays, but we don't sit, get up. This is a special one, because this is Jane. And Jane, yeah, very special. Very special happy birthday to Jane, because without her, I think this place would have crumbled to dust a long time ago. She's the one that makes it go. So, Jane, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. She's talking about retiring. Try to talk her out of it. It's a done deal, huh? Okay. Yeah. Oh, we're sure going to miss you. But I suppose you, well, I hope you'll still come. She'll probably go to some other church, you know. No, just congratulations, Jane. I wanted to make a big deal out of it because you're a special person to us. Okay, let's turn to Genesis chapter 46. Now we're going to talk about Israel's move down to Egypt. Last hour we looked at the reunion of Joseph and his brothers. And now Joseph has sent his brothers back home from Egypt to Canaan to get their families, to get their dad, and pack everything up and move it to Egypt. And when they get to Egypt, Joseph is going to take care of them because there's a famine. Remember, the Pharaoh had the dream about the 7 years, and there's still 5 years left of famine. So Joseph told his brothers, you can't carry enough food to keep you through those 5 years, so just go get your families and move them down to Egypt here, and we'll take care of them. And chapter 46 begins with a theophany. And a theophany is just God talking to a person. And we'll see that God is talking to Jacob. And in verse 1 through 4, we have the vision. Let's read that. 46:1 says, so Israel set out with all that he had and came to Beersheba, and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here I am. He said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. And Joseph will close your eyes. So that's the theophany, or the vision part of the theophany. And we have Israel, the nation Israel, and the man Israel. Notice and remember, as I said last hour, Jacob and Israel are the same person. So when you see verse 1 says, Israel set out with all that he had. And in verse 2, it says, God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And you kind of scratch your head and wonder and say, why did he speak to Israel and say, Jacob, Jacob? Well, it's the same person, the same person. And those names are used somewhat interchangeably. Sometimes there is a reason for the difference. But he's going to send nation Israel now down to Egypt. Now, why is that? We have to stop and think, you know, God promised Israel the land of Canaan. And now he's going to bring them down from Canaan to Egypt to make them into a great nation. Right now, nation Israel consists of about 70 people, all told. And he's going to God is going to take that 70 people and he's going to grow it into a nation of around 2 million. And they'll be about 2 million strong when they leave Egypt again. And of course, circumstances are going to change. Right now, they are in the Pharaoh's, they're in his eye. They're his special people. He loves them because of Joseph, because he loves Joseph. That's going to change after Joseph and Jacob die and there's a different Pharaoh installed. What's going to happen is he's going to start becoming afraid that Israel is getting so big that they could take over. You know, they could have a revolution and take over the country. So he just smashes them and he turns them into slaves. And that's how they get from this position that we see them here now into the position that they're in when Charlton Heston gets there. So I used that joke last hour, so I'm running out. But why did God bring Israel down to Egypt instead of just leaving them in Canaan and letting them grow into a nation of 2 million up in Canaan? Well, there are some good reasons. And in chapter 43, in verse 32, we see one of them. Genesis 43:32, and we have Joseph eating with his brothers, and it says, so they served him by himself and them by themselves. That's Joseph and his brothers, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat bread with Hebrews, for that is loathsome to the Egyptians. So there's a reason. Foreigners were loathsome to the Egyptians. They did not like foreigners. They wouldn't even sit down at a table and eat with a foreigner. What does that mean? Well, what it means is Israel was isolated. They were isolated geographically in Egypt. And socially, they did not intermingle with Egyptians because Egyptians just wouldn't do it. They did not like foreigners. So that gave Israel a chance to develop as nation Israel. Had they stayed in Canaan, the Canaanites had no such feelings. They would have intermingled, they would have intermarried, and the nation Israel would have been lost as such. So God brought them to a place where they would be isolated. Isolated geographically, isolated socially. He brings them down, and Egypt puts them in a place called Goshen. And if you've seen the Ten Commandments, they always say Goshen in there. And actually, no one knows where Goshen was. It was a place in Egypt. No one really knows. The best scholarship puts it on the north coast on the east side of the Nile River Delta. But that's just scholarship. You know what they say about history and scholarship and history about things like that, that they don't have direct evidence for, that it's 90% guesswork and 10% biased opinion. So we don't know where Goshen was. We'll just leave it at that. So there was a danger of an amalgamation with the Canaanites, but that was not true with the Egyptians. So Israel stayed Israel. Israel did not have a chance to adopt Egypt's gods. They stayed with the God of their fathers, Isaac and Abraham. And that's why they had to be isolated. Now, as I mentioned last hour, the names Jacob and Israel refer to the same person. In 45:27, It says, when they told him all the words of Joseph that he had spoken to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father, Jacob, revived. And then in 46:1, it says, so Israel set out with all that he had. And even back in verse 28, it says, then Israel said, it is enough. So Jacob and Israel are the same person. Now in this case, we have a reason for the difference in the names that's somewhat obvious. He's called Israel because he stands for nation Israel. This is a national venture. Everybody, all the Israelites are going from Canaan to Egypt. And yet when God talks to him on a personal level, he calls him Jacob. He says, Jacob, Jacob. So on a personal communication, he's called Jacob. Now that's not always the case. You can't, or I can't anyway, fathom always the difference of why it's Israel in one place and Jacob in the other. But it's enough for me that it takes the people who hold the documentary hypothesis and it throws them into fits because they say that one writer used only the name Jacob and one writer used only the name Israel. Well, that would put somebody mixing and matching sentences here because the names are used interchangeably in this section. So, Jacob, Israel, same person. Just keep that in mind. Now the confirmation, and I'll ask a question. We have a confirmation. In verse 3, it says, he said, and that's God, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. Now why did God have to confirm what Joseph told his brothers? His brothers took home the news to their father and said, Joseph wants us all to come down to Egypt. Now, why would Jacob or Israel be reluctant to do that? Well, there are a couple of reasons for that, too. Remember when Abraham went down to Egypt, what happened? Look back at chapter 12. And of course, Jacob would know his family history. And back in chapter 12, we find out that when Abraham went to Egypt, he got himself into trouble. It was very troublesome for him. In verse 10, it says, now there was a famine in the land. So Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. And it came about, when he came near to Egypt, that he said to Sarai, his wife, see now, I know that you are a beautiful woman. And when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. And they'll kill me, but they'll let you live. So please say that you are my sister, so that it may go well with me because of you, and that I may live on account of you. It came about when Abram came into Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. Pharaoh's officials saw her and praised her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Therefore he treated Abram well for her sake, and gave him sheep and oxen and donkeys and male and female servants, and female donkeys and camels. So Abraham got himself into a big sin problem here. He lied. There's no getting around it. He passed his wife off as his sister just to save his own skin. Now, that's not something that Jacob would see as a positive thing. So he's kind of wondering now, should I really go down to Egypt or shouldn't I? You know, look at chapter 26 And in Genesis chapter 26, verse 2 and 3, it says, "The Lord appeared to him and said, 'Do not go down to Egypt. Stay in the land of which I shall tell you.'" And that's God talking to Isaac. So God forbade Isaac for going down to go down to Egypt. He said, "Don't do it." So here we have Jacob now, and God is reassuring him in this vision. And that's, I think, the purpose of the vision, is God wants to reassure Jacob that this is my will for nation Israel to go on down to Egypt. So you can be isolated, you can worship the God of your fathers alone, you won't get caught up into the, you know, you won't go over to some Egyptian's house for supper and they'll say a prayer to some god and you'll get into a conversation and pretty soon you'll get converted over into their religion. That couldn't happen because an Egyptian wouldn't have a Hebrew at his dinner table. Just wouldn't happen. They didn't like strangers. So God is being protective here of nation Israel. The grammar of this opening words in this theophany is kind of interesting. First, there's a definite article with the word God. Notice how in verse 2, it says, "God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, 'Jacob, Jacob.' And he said, 'Here I am.' He said, 'I am the God. I am the God of your father.'" So he uses a definite article. God is exclusive. It points to God being the exclusive God, the God of your fathers. So he's telling Jacob that the God of your fathers is the exclusive only God. Literally, it reads, "I am the God, God of your father." The "of your father" ties Jacob back to Isaac and Abraham and the promises that were made to them. So Jacob trusts God that someday nation Israel will come back to Canaan, because God promised Abraham and Isaac that they would have Canaan as their promised land. So Jacob trusts that. Another interesting point, the first person pronouns are emphatic. "I am the God, the God of your father." Very emphatic again. And "I will make you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt." So it's very reassuring. This theophany is very reassuring to Jacob that it is God's will that he go to Egypt. There's no question about it. It's God's will. So we go to the journey now in verse 5 through 7. And in verse 5 it says, "Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. And they took their livestock and their property, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and came to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him. His sons, his grandsons with him, his daughters and his granddaughters, and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt." So Jacob burns his bridges. He takes everything he has and heads on down to Egypt. Now, verse 27 is where I got that number 70. When I said nation Israel numbered about 70 at this time, down in verse 27 it says, "And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2. All the persons of the house of Jacob who came to Egypt were 70. So there's 70 in nation Israel. not a very big population, but God is going to grow that population in Egypt to a size of a couple million, or the best scholars say 2 million. I wasn't there, so I couldn't count, but the best scholarship says there were about 2 million Israelites who left Egypt during the Exodus. Now, we have in verse 8 down through 30 the list of the people who came, and you can read that at your leisure. I'm not going to go through and comment on a list of names. That would not be fruitful, but they are listed there if you're interested. And we want to go now then to the next section, which is a deliverance through wisdom. We're going to look at Joseph's wisdom and how he delivered not only Egypt, but Israel as well, through his wisdom, by using his wisdom. So that's the theme of this section, how Joseph implemented a wise plan that preserved the family of Israel and the land of Egypt, both. Section has two parts. First, Joseph presents his family to Pharaoh. That's in 46:31 through 47:12. That will be when the family gets there. Joseph is going to present them to Pharaoh. And then Joseph is going to administer the land for Pharaoh. And he's going to do a very good job of it. So we have those two sections. Let's look at the first one. Joseph presenting his family to Pharaoh in 46:31 through 47:12. Now again, these are not terribly difficult to understand passages. We'll read the passage, make a few comments on it, but it's basically fairly easy to understand. We have 46:31, where it says, Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh and will say to him, my brothers and my father's household, who were in the land of Canaan, have come to me, and the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and herds and all that they have. When Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation? You shall say, your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, that you may live in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is loathsome to the Egyptians. Then Joseph went in and told Pharaoh and said, my father, my brother, and their flocks and their herds and all that they have come out of the land of Canaan, and behold, they are in the land of Goshen. He took 5 men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh said to his brothers, what is your occupation? So they said to Pharaoh, your servants are shepherds, both we and our fathers. They said to Pharaoh, we have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now therefore, please let your servants live in the land of Goshen. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is at your disposal. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them live in the land of Goshen. And if you know any capable men among them, then put them in charge of my livestock. Then Joseph brought his father Jacob and presented him to Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Jacob, how many years have you lived? So Jacob said to Pharaoh, the years of my sojourning are 130. Few and unpleasant have been the years of my life, nor have they attained the years that my father lived during the days of their sojourning. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from his presence. So Joseph settled his fathers and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of the Ramses, as Pharaoh had ordered. Joseph provided his father and his brothers and all his father's household with food according to their little ones. So we have a preparation. Joseph is going to present his family to Pharaoh, but first he's going to prepare for that event. In verse 31 through 34, we read, and this preparation is done through a very wise, thoughtful, thorough introduction. Now, he's going to be very careful about this introduction. We'll notice that Joseph wants to secure Pharaoh's goodwill. He wants Pharaoh to think kindly of the nation Israel so they can get the good land that he wants. He wants him to treat them very well. And he treats the meeting of his family and Pharaoh as a very delicate matter. It's like bringing your fiance home to your parents for the first time. It's a delicate matter. You want them to do well. You know, when my dad has a little thing about this, don't mention politics, you know, when we go over there, or don't mention this or don't mention that. That kind of thing. It's very, be careful. We want this to go well. So that's what he's doing. He's prepping his family to meet the Pharaoh. And the last half of verse 34, it says, you shall say, your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, that you may live in the land of Goshen. And that's why he wants the meeting to go well, because he wants to get the land of Goshen, which is a very good place. First, the preparation is done through the introduction. Next, it's going to be done through the careful and wise words that Joseph uses. And Joseph coaches his family on what to say. Remember up there, he said, talking about Pharaoh, he says, now if Pharaoh asks you your occupation, you answer by saying, Ancha Mikna. Ancha Mikna means keepers of livestock, not Roeh. That means shepherd, because the Egyptians didn't like shepherds. So he said, don't say shepherd, say keepers of livestock. So what do? When Pharaoh asks, we're shepherds. I don't know if they're just dense or what, but Joseph was a very wise person, and he coached his brothers on what to say. They didn't say exactly what Joseph told them, but they succeeded in accomplishing the same purpose. Why? Well, Joseph had in mind, if you tell them you're keepers of livestock, and don't say shepherds, he doesn't like shepherds, you know, he's got a thing about shepherds, and they'll give you the best land. And they came in and said, we're shepherds. So what does he do? He isolates them up in Goshen, which is what they wanted anyway. So it worked out exactly the way it should have, even though his brothers didn't exactly follow his advice. So we have nation Israel in Goshen. Notice here that the sovereignty of God does not forbid the use of every possible means to gain an end. Here's Joseph, and he's doing everything in his power to get his family the best land in Egypt, up in Goshen. And he uses everything at his disposal to do that. And I put as long as it's biblical. Come on, that doesn't mean, you know, if I have an end, say, of being a millionaire, I'll be a bank robber. That doesn't apply here. It has to be a biblical. But he's using biblical methods. He's doing everything in his power to make sure that they get the land he wants. And they do, up in Goshen. So then they have the audience of Pharaoh, audience with Pharaoh in 47, 1 through 12. And if we focus on the three participants in this audience, first the brothers. Remember what Pharaoh said? Look back at 45 in verse 17. In 45:17, it says, "Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Say to your brothers, do this, load your beasts and go to the land of Canaan, take your father and your households and come to me, and I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you will eat the fat of the land.'" So he had already promised them the best land in Egypt, right? In addition, what was Joseph's role in Egypt? He was the head guy next to Pharaoh. He could say anything he wanted. He could put them anywhere he wanted because he was head. You know, anybody complained, they'd have to go above him, and the only person above him was Pharaoh himself. But Joseph's being wise here. He's using his wisdom. Why did they need to ask Pharaoh for this land when Pharaoh had already promised them and Joseph was already in a position to give it to him? Well, Joseph doesn't even want to leave room for criticism. So what he does is he doesn't want to be criticized for providing the best possible land for his people, because that might make the people grumble. So he works out the situation of providing for Jacob's family by having Pharaoh make the announcement. So he's a smart guy. He says, look, I'm going to keep the people on my side. I don't want them to get mad at me thinking, boy, yeah, here's this Pharaoh's right-hand man. He brings his family down and they get all the good land. So he works it so Pharaoh makes the announcement. Pharaoh says, take your people and take your brothers and give them the best land. So Joseph, he's pretty smart. Now Jacob, if you focus on him in this interview, he blesses Pharaoh twice in verse 7 and verse 10. Verse 7, it says, "Then Joseph brought his father Jacob and presented him to Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh." And in verse 10, "And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from his presence." It's kind of interesting to note, you know, remember back in Genesis, God said, "I will bless those who bless you, and the ones who curse you I will curse," to nation Israel. Now this is working the other way, but it's still working, isn't it? Because he says Jacob is blessing Pharaoh, and Pharaoh is profiting. His land was saved by Joseph. Joseph predicted the famine. He's the one who set aside reserves so they would have food during the famine. So being blessed by Israel is a very good thing. We forget that sometimes as a government and as a people. But being on good terms with nation Israel is a very good thing in God's eyes. Now, Pharaoh orders in verse 11 and 12, "So Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land of the land in the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had ordered. So Pharaoh is the one who ordered it. And Joseph provided his father and his brothers and all his father's household with food according to their little ones. So here's another example of a primary and secondary cause. Who's the provider here? Joseph, right? Through being a wise man, he has worked himself into this position. He's brought his family from Canaan. He got him the best land in Egypt. This guy was smart. So it was Joseph that was responsible. He was the provider. Look at Psalm 105. Psalm 105 and verse 16. Talks about this period in history that we've been studying. And in verse 16, it says, "And he called for a famine upon the land. He broke the whole staff of bread. He sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. They afflicted his feet with fetters. He himself was laid in irons until the time that his word came to pass. The word of the Lord tested him. The king sent and released him, the ruler of peoples, and set him free. He made him lord of his house and ruler over all his possessions, to imprison his princes at will, that he might teach his elders wisdom. Israel also came into Egypt. Thus Jacob sojourned in the land of Ham, and he caused his people to be very fruitful, and made them stronger than their adversaries." And the he there in verse 24 is not Jacob, it's God. God is the one who prospered the people in Egypt and made them fruitful and made them stronger than their adversaries, which was a two-edged sword, as I said before. When they became so strong, the new Pharaoh got scared and came crashing down upon them. But for right now, they are settled in the prime real estate of Egypt, in the land of Goshen. So here we see Joseph as the provider. The psalm stresses the hand of God behind it. Now in verse 27, reading along, it says, "Now Israel lived in the land of Egypt in Goshen, and they acquired property in it and were fruitful and became very numerous." So it confirms the prosperity of Israel. So there's Joseph and his family. Now we have Joseph administering the land for Pharaoh in verse 13 through 27. A verse of chapter 47. Interesting to note in this section that Joseph never provided without requiring payment. Look at verse 15. It says, When the money was all spent in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, "Give us food. For why should we die in your presence? For our money is gone." Then Joseph said, "Give up your livestock, and I will give you food for your livestock, since your money is gone." So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them food in exchange for the horses and the flocks and the herds and the donkeys, and he fed them with food in exchange for all their livestock that year. So Joseph did not provide handouts to everybody who ran out of money because they spent their money. He didn't give them handouts. He said, "Okay, you've got to have something of value. You bring it to me and then I'll give you money." I see some smiles. We've forgotten that, haven't we? We don't do that anymore. We just as a nation, we just give away money. And what happens when we give away money? What happens here? Look at verse 25. It says, "So they said, 'You have saved our lives. Let us find favor in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's slaves.'" So they were grateful that Joseph was there with his money so he could pay them for what they had. That's smart. The people responded by being grateful to him. We give money to third world nations like there's no tomorrow. And how do they respond? They hate us. What's the difference? Well, Joseph was a smart guy, like I said. This is intelligent benevolence. He saved the people. He saved them, but he didn't give them handouts. He gave them earnouts. We should put that word in our vocabulary, especially in Congress. Earnouts instead of handouts. Entitlements. You know, and don't get me wrong, I don't have nothing against helping someone who's down on their luck or someone who can't do something. But, you know, people are going to hate you if you just give them money. They're going to resent you. And that's exactly what Joseph did not do. Because if you give somebody without, just give them money without expecting anything in return on a regular basis, you know, like we give out welfare, we give out aid to other countries, we give out all kinds of the American taxpayers' money, yours and mine. You may have noticed we hit a pet peeve here. And we give away all this money and ask nothing in return just because we're nice people. But you know, that steals their dignity. That robs people of dignity and self-reliance. And they respond with hate. Because you stole their dignity and all you gave them in return was money. They wanted to earn that money. Now the blessing of Jacob in 47:28 through 48:22, and I'll just do an overview of this. Again, it's quite easy reading. It's not difficult to understand. This section begins a series of narratives about the death and burial of Jacob. Remember, Jacob had expected to go to his grave in sorrow. Remember when he thought that Joseph was dead? He said he would go to his grave in tears. And now he's been reunited with Joseph. And when he learned that Joseph was alive, he said it would be adequate him just to see Joseph's face. Well, he got to see that, but not only that, he got to see his grandchildren before he died. And then he was prepared to die. Remember, we saw that earlier. So he got quite a bit more, actually, than he asked for. So the events in this section, as you read it, and I won't read the whole section because of time, they are equivalent to a deathbed scene. We have an oath between Jacob and Joseph in 28 through 31. In verse 28, it says, "Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years, so the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. And when the time came for Israel to die drew near, he called his son Joseph and said to him, 'Please, if I have found favor in your sight, place now your hand under my thigh and deal with me in kindness and faithfulness. Please do not bury me in Egypt. But when I lie down with my fathers, you shall carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burial place.' And he said, 'I will do as you have said.'" And As you all know, Charlton Heston did that. It was in the movie, so it had to be true, right? They took Joseph's bones back to Canaan. He said, "Swear to me." So he swore to him. Then Israel bowed in worship at the head of the bed. It's interesting that in Hebrews chapter 11, Hebrews 11 is the faith chapter, remember? And Hebrews 11 chooses this as Jacob's greatest act of faith. Look up there at Hebrews. We'll take a little extra time. I hope no one has a roast in the oven. Hebrews 11, 21. It says, "By faith Jacob, as he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff." So, in the faith chapter of the Bible, talking about the heroes of the faith, this is the event that the author of Hebrews chooses to point out the faith of Jacob. While he was dying and laying on his deathbed, he did a couple of things. If you go back to Genesis now, in verse 48, or chapter 48, chapter 48, Israel's last days, we have the adoption of Ephraim and Manasseh. Now we see why there's no tribe of Joseph in the tribes of Israel, the 12 tribes. Did you ever notice that if you read along? There's no tribe of Joseph. Well, Joseph was probably Israel's most spiritual son of all. Why isn't there a tribe of Joseph? Well, there isn't, because Joseph got the birthright. Remember what the birthright meant? A double inheritance. How does that fit in? Well, in verse 1 it says, "Now it came to about after these things that Joseph was told, 'Behold, your father is sick.' So he took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, with him. And what was told to Jacob, 'Behold, your son Joseph has come to you,' Israel collected his strength and sat up in the bed. Then Jacob said to Joseph, 'God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. And he said to me, Behold, I will make you fruitful and numerous, and I will make you a company of peoples, and I will give this land to your descendants after you for an everlasting possession. Now your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine.'" So he adopted Joseph's sons. And there is a tribe of Ephraim, and there is a tribe of Manasseh in the lists of the 12 tribes. So what does that mean? Well, that means that Joseph got the birthright. What did the birthright mean? Double portion in the inheritance. So he had two sons that got portion in the inheritance, while the others just got one. So Joseph did get the birthright. Now, he did not get the blessing. Who got the blessing? Anybody remember? Judah, sure. And we looked at that a week or two ago, when Judah got the blessing because he was a type of Christ. He didn't actually get the blessing because of what he did. He did what he did because God chose him to have the blessing. That's how Christian life works. We don't get things from God because of what we do. We do things because of what we already have from God. But that's why Judah has the blessing and Joseph has the birthright. He has the double share. Both of his sons are named as tribes of Israel. Well, we'll just end up here with some qualities of Jacob's faith. You know, Jacob never lost sight of the promise. And that's what we have in Hebrews. That was his act of faith, as he never lost sight of the promise, even on his deathbed. His faith was confident about the future. Why? Because of what God had done in the past. And that's what we should be. We should be confident about the future, no matter who the president is, because of what God has done in the past. You know what he did for me? He sent his son and died on the cross and paid for my sins. What's that next to having a president I don't particularly care for? It's nothing. I mean, God did everything. So we do because of what he does, what he has already done. And he recognized, this is very important, Jacob recognized that God's ways are not man's ways. Look at 48:12. Then Joseph took him from his knees and bowed with his face to the ground. Joseph took them both, Ephraim with his right hand towards Israel's left, and Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right, and brought them close to him. But Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on the head of Ephraim, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, crossing his hands, although Manasseh was the firstborn. So the firstborn is supposed to get the blessing, right? But he crossed his hands, and the younger got the blessing. Why? Because God's way isn't man's way. Man has traditions. God has truth. He has revelation. And we're going to end it up here. And as I said, I've just kind of skimmed over some of this. You may read it at your leisure with the notes. It's fairly easy to understand. It's really not that difficult. And we'll start then with verse 49 and probably finish up the book of Genesis next week, because Genesis in these last chapters, again, fairly easy to understand. Father, thank you for your word, which is living and powerful. In Christ's name, amen.